This is the Bet the Board Midweek Podcast Report, and before we even get into breaking down tonight's game between Tampa and the Falcons, a review what we learned on Monday night, Payne, as our faithful co-host, why don't you regale some of our fine listeners exactly why we had audio difficulties when we recorded Monday's version?
Apparently that Frank Sinatra guy is pretty popular, and we broke some rules with some copyright stuff, so I don't think we're going to have Frank joining us anymore on the podcast, but hopefully we can find some intro music moving forward.
Yeah, we did want to turn this from a tandem into a trio, but apparently Frank won't sign on the dotted line. For our podcast purposes, I'm not sure if that means somebody was listening or SoundCloud's sound detection software a lot more advanced than either you or I. They were able to see right through us, given, what, four podcasts before they said, no more of this happening on our watch.
Yeah, it took four times. I think it might have been the length. Maybe we can shorten that a little bit and bypass some of their legal stuff. But I don't know. We're looking for some intro music. If anybody has any suggestions, feel free to drop us a line on Twitter, at Todd Furman or at Payne Insider, and we'll look into it.
Yeah, perfect way to do it. And we'll get ahead of the curve and say, no, we will not be using Beck, You're a Loser, Baby as our intro music anytime soon, despite what some of our loyal fans might want to hear on this particular pod. I still think, Payne, that the best idea is to actually to have you sing a rendition of Luck Be a Lady by Frank, and that way we won't get ourselves in trouble.
I do fantastic work in the shower, so it might transition well to the podcast, but I might have to charge you a little bit for that.
Yeah, well, it's not that kind of show, so thanks for the visual early on a Thursday morning. I really appreciate that. And like we said, before we get into Tampa and Atlanta, the voice you hear on the other line is that of Payne Insider. You can find his work at PayneInsider.com and follow him at Payne Insider. And I'm Todd Furman. Find my stuff at ToddsTake.com and just Todd Furman on Twitter. Payne, when we look at the Monday night game, Philadelphia, we talked about it, getting some sharp money, didn't look good for extended stretches in that game, but was able to go into Lucas Oil Stadium and come away victorious from a Colts team who, aside from Andrew Luck, probably a NFL bottom feeder. What did you see in that game that you think we can use moving forward regarding those two football teams?
You know, right now as it stands, Chip Kelly has really emphasized on being in shape. And right now when you look at that team being down double digits in both of their first two games and having great comebacks in the second half, that fourth quarter, they really looked like they just had the Colts back on their heels. They were the more in-shape team, and I think that's how it played out a little bit. I don't like to take too much from that because you have a guy like Andrew Luck with 5 minutes to go is up a touchdown. And really the game's in their hands. I would say they blew it more than Philadelphia won that game. And I think it'll transition into one of the games we talk about later today in this podcast. But I wasn't overly impressed with Philadelphia. I think Foles still has a long way to go, especially starting off the game. I was really surprised that the Colts were able to tame that run game in the first half. Obviously, I alluded to not in shape as much as Philadelphia in the second half, so those run lanes opened up a bit. But that's one thing I want to kind of maybe we use an angle if we're going to fade Philadelphia, maybe looking to fade them in the first half of some of these games.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, when you look at Philadelphia, I think the one interesting part is the use of Darren Sproles in that offense. Apparently, Chip Kelly trying to integrate him a little bit at a time. He really became the X factor when the Colts did their best to try and bottle up LeSean McCoy. And as you alluded to with Nick Foles, I won't even say curious decision-making because I don't think that was the problem. He just showed that when the Colts took away a lot of the underneath stuff, he wasn't really able to stretch the defense. Whether or not that's on him or the team's loss of DeSean Jackson because Macklin and Riley Cooper aren't capable of doing that, but it definitely is something to keep in mind as we look at teams and the way they're going to try and fill gaps and play assignment football to make Philadelphia as one-dimensional as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they went out and they got Sproles. They get him for a fifth-round pick. It was a great value, especially when you talk about that system and that scheme. Now, it's always tough. Chip Kelly's got a battle. It's really, you know, you talk about bringing LeSean McCoy off the field. I think we'll see a lot of them in the backfield potentially at the same time moving forward as they throw little chinks in their armor against defenses. But for me, it's on Foles this year. I don't think we see anything close to what he did last year. This is a guy that does like to push the ball down the field, and I think that opens things up underneath for some of his guys, but he's got to be more accurate moving forward. He's got to be the driving force of this offense because, like I said, I was very surprised that the Colts defense was able to shut them down on the ground in the first half. And again, we talked about it in the last podcast, four of their top seven linemen being out. So it's got to be on Foles now a little more than it was previously.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly how these two teams handle their games this weekend. But as you alluded to, we will get to those shortly. Let's start with a Thursday night game, a division showdown in the NFC South, Atlanta. Let's call them a six-point favorite, as that's what we're seeing in most of the sharper books out there. Still some 6.5 in this fine town in Vegas. You've seen some money come in on the total, pushing that number from 44.5 on the open out to 45.5. Of course, the big story here, Tampa starting 0-2, and a lot of unfamiliar faces will be dotting that defensive starting 11 tonight.
Yeah, well, you look at their week one lineup on the defensive side of the ball, and as you transition to this week three, 5 of 11 starters for Tampa Bay will be out on the defensive side. You lose defensive ends, you lose a middle linebacker. Those are the three key cogs of the way the NFL's played today, so I think that's going to be interesting. Lovie Smith's defense has not been very good at all. You talk week one, Derek Anderson, 71% completion rate. That was fifth best in week one. And then you go to the backup's backup in Austin Davis, 76% completion rate last week, third best in the NFL. So that Bucs defense, I think they're hurting right now. And right now it looks like Julio Jones is going to go, Roddy White's going to go. So I just like that Atlanta offense on that fast track. So it'll be interesting to see if the Bucs defense can contain that offense.
What do you make of the moves, though? They seem almost reverse correlated, all things considered. But as you talk about, I think the one thing that people have missed is, despite Tampa playing two games under the total, that defense has been anything but a brick wall. Since you see money coming in on the dog and money coming in on the over, it's safe to assume that, you know, Josh McCown is going to have a chance to open this offense a little bit. Still some questions, clearly, as far as who's going to be the primary ball carrier for Tampa as well. Doug Martin upgraded from questionable to probable, doubtful to questionable to probable. Bobby Rainey, we saw, was more than an adequate fill-in. You know, how do we think Tampa Bay elects to approach this game, knowing that they can't really be 0-3 if they're going to have any shot in the division?
Well, I think at the beginning of the season, if you read any articles out there in late August, you know, Lovie Smith wanted to go up-tempo offense. Well, we really haven't seen that throughout the course of the first 2 weeks. I think their offense definitely progressed last week. I know they only hung 17, but they had a red zone interception. And then because of that, they got uber conservative late in that game. And so I think their offense, and Atlanta's no world beater, they're the only team that has yet to record a sack in the NFL. And Tampa's issues are on their offensive line. So if Atlanta can't get pressure, I think that's conducive to Tampa scoring some points. And again, last weekend, they could have easily had another 10 points on the board. It's why it's very important, I think, to go through, dig in these box scores, dig a little deeper than just looking at the final score and saying, hey, we hung 17 again at home. So I think that's something you look at. And we have seen some movement on the dog here. So I think that probably bodes well if towards the over that the dog's going to score a little bit based on their first two performances of 14 points and 17 points.
More agreement from you as far as the side and totals concerned when we look to close the book on this one and move on to the rest of the Sunday slate?
You know, I'm not in love with Tampa. I understand the move. They've matched up well against this team. They've been very competitive. Last year, both games went over between these two teams. And when I look at this, I think if it does go over, Tampa's going to have to score some points, and their defense is just very, very banged up right now. So I think it is a correlation in this game between dog and over, as crazy as that might sound, generally speaking. But right now, I think I would need a 7 on Tampa if I was to look in that direction.
Very interesting. And maybe for those listening, it might be time to explore a Tampa Bay team total as well, depending on what number you're able to get, because it will most likely be under that key number of 20, probably somewhere in that 18.5 to 19.5 range. So something worth keeping in mind. But as we shift focus towards Sunday, and we'll try and cover each and every one of these games at, you know, in different varying degrees of detail, one of the more fascinating games, let's start with the Super Bowl rematch between Denver and Seattle. Seattle, a 5-point favorite, total of 48.5. In this game, so much being made of Seattle's loss last weekend to San Diego in triple degree weather. You know, is this the demise of the world champions? Has Denver fortified their roster enough from what we saw in the Super Bowl to go up to the Pacific Northwest and beat Seattle? But for me, Payne, this number looks a little bit short with Seattle only a 5-point favorite.
Yeah, you're actually trending downwards. You're looking at Chris in that 4.5 range even right now. And for me, in a game like this, I kind of make Seattle not as much as that 6 we talked to some weeks, but they're in that 4, 4.5 range. So this is telling us that this game is virtually a pick'em on a neutral field, and you just rewind to last February, and we know that wasn't the case. Obviously, this is a game Denver has circled. Seattle is coming off a loss, and I think those two elements kind of lend some value towards the favorite here. This is just a really, really bad matchup for Denver. We saw it in the Super Bowl. As great as Peyton Manning is, he tends to get some happy feet. He can't really throw the ball down the field, which Seattle loves to press, loves to knock rhythm offenses off key. When they do allow catches, the secondary tackles extremely well. So I'm really a little shocked at this number. I think revenge is keeping it down a little bit. I think the loss last week, obviously, that was the first time I've really seen Seattle dominated. That final score, 30-21, wasn't even indicative of how beat up they were last week. So this will be an interesting game, but I kind of like Seattle in this one.
Yeah, I think I'd echo those same sentiments. You look at this number and see Seattle coming off a loss. You talked about 4.5 points. Probably not even a fair enough evaluation of exactly what Seattle has working for them. Home field advantage-wise, Denver, I don't put too much stock in their struggles last week against Kansas City. We believed that they were going to struggle. Maybe not as much as they did against the Chiefs, only picking up 3 points in the second half. But I think the real telling sign here is I know, you know, a lot of people try and take as much information as they can away from public betting percentages and everything else. Fascinating to see about 60% of the tickets, albeit early in the week, coming in on the Broncos playing that revenge angle. Aside from that, I don't really see a matchup they can exploit. Now, you talked about Seattle and some of their struggles last week. Another pretty interesting game is San Diego heads across the country to take on Buffalo for breakfast football. You've seen a pretty big move here on the Bills from pick out to -2.5. What do we make of the Chargers at this point? I guess what do we make of the 2-0 Buffalo Bills?
You know, Buffalo is very fortunate, I think. They obviously went to Chicago week one. I think they were outgained in that game. They were out first downed in that game. Jay Cutler made a couple big mistakes, and they came away with a win. Any road win in the NFL is positive, so you don't want to take anything away from that. Last week they faced the Dolphins, which is an absolutely nightmare matchup for the Dolphins. Great matchup for Buffalo. And then you transition to this week. They can start 3-0. San Diego, they had the late game on Sunday. Travel across the country, but I think that's kind of overstated, the West Coast team going east for the 1 o'clock start, unless you're the Oakland Raiders. But
before we talk about the Raiders, that may be any time a football game starts, the Raiders may be overwhelmed. Time slot will have absolutely no impact on how they perform.
That's probably pretty accurate. Buffalo is a physical team. That's what they do. Their lines are the best part of what they have going. They run the ball a ton, but when you look at San Diego, they really out-physicaled Seattle last week, which is pretty shocking. Held the ball for the vast majority of that game. I know professionals are on the Buffalo side. If this were to somehow get to 3, I would look San Diego. I just think they're the more complete football team. I think they're the better football team. I'm not sold on EJ Manuel quite yet. But that's really, for me, professionals obviously are on Buffalo, got out ahead. But at 2.5, I think this is a game that you stay away from, really.
Do you really think we're going to see a 3 in the market? Because I would echo those same sentiments. I think this is almost a spot, and you hate to say people getting a little bit too cute, but it's not like the Chargers are 2-0 right now. Maybe if they were in that spot, it'd be a much different story here. But yeah, for me, I feel the same way. The question is, if we're patient, do you think we'll be able to get a 3 on the Chargers?
I don't think we get that 3. Now, obviously, you lump in the travel, but you also lump in 3 games in a short window of time. They played the Monday nighter against Arizona, and who knows what this line looks like. If Philip Rivers can hold a snap, they probably kick a field goal there and win that game. Then you get a big game against Seattle. We know how teams perform the week after playing Seattle, just based on how physical they are, and then you get the travel across the country. So it seems like a conjunction of a lot of elements handicappers use, and San Diego kind of falls in a lot of those metrics that you'll want to fade. But I think if you get to 3, which I'm not sure we see, then you look San Diego. At 2.5, the value's gone if you like Buffalo, I believe.
And, you know, we've talked at great lengths about look-ahead lines and the kind of value you can take away from that. Before last weekend's game and the Chargers actually beating the Seahawks, and Buffalo taking care of business at home against Miami. You were looking at San Diego, a 2.5-point favorite, so nearly a 5-point move. So the situation, in my opinion, more than accounted for in this particular game. And while we're in the eastern half of the U.S., let's look at an entire division real quick. I know there's one interdivisional matchup between Washington and Philadelphia, but also let's hit on Dallas. Right now, a 1-point dog as they go to the Midwest to take on St. Louis, and the Giants, a 2-point home underdog against the Texans. Start with the Redskins and Eagles. What do we see here, Payne?
Well, I think we talked about it last week. As soon as RG3 went down, everybody that was semi-sharp or everybody that we talked to, and we talked to a lot of groups, were, let's invest in the Redskins' futures, because Kirk Cousins is a massive, massive, massive upgrade here for this Washington offense. He can push the ball down the field. He's better for what Gruden's trying to do. Philadelphia, obviously, on the short week, playing Monday night. Small travel, not a ton, but I think Washington, when you look at their defense, they get pieces back this year on defense on that defensive line, and that's where Philadelphia is really going to struggle, starting that third-string right tackle. I think Washington does enough. Obviously, we saw this game open 7. That number, long gone at this point. So I think Washington's definitely the side here.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with this move. I think the situation sets up nicely, and really believe from having watched the Colts and what Andrew Luck was able to do, I think Cousins probably, safe to say, has more weapons at his disposal, and more importantly, they can establish a ground game and do something very similar. The fact that Colts are able to run all over Philadelphia for extended stretches makes Washington look like a very attractive underdog. Dallas-St. Louis, the Rams go on the road, beat Tampa in a game that did see some money from the professionals. You're seeing this looking like one of the more public sides here in the Cowboys, or the suddenly resurgent Cowboys, I should say, who went to Tennessee playing their second road game in as many weeks. Look pretty impressive in dispatching of the Titans.
Yeah, this is a Dallas team that perception is really funny. Week one, professionals thought they played very, very well against San Francisco, but the public didn't. So all of a sudden they open up a dog, a 4-point dog at Tennessee. Professionals all over Dallas last week. Now it looks like it's going to flip-flop here. Dallas getting lots of early love from the public. That trend will continue. Looks like Hill in for St. Louis. What's really been impressive about Dallas is obviously their defense at this point. Is that something that can sustain itself? I don't know. They obviously are leaning on DeMarco Murray big time. Everything I'm hearing out of Dallas is Tony Romo is not 100% healthy. And when you look at his downfield passing numbers, that probably lends itself to being true. Everything that he's done so far, a lot of dink and dunk, anything deep down the field has been very, very bad for Tony Romo and the Cowboys. So I think this is a game, when you look at it, a lot of DeMarco Murray, weapons out for St. Louis, obviously a backup quarterback, but you lose Tavon Austin. And you see why this number, even with Dallas's defense overall, you're looking at a number that opened 45. We have seen professionals come in and hit this under a little bit.
You make any adjustment given that Austin Davis to Sean Hill, or you treat the Rams as the exact same entity, no matter which of those two quarterbacks starts?
You know, maybe a half point at the very most, but when you trade Austin Davis and Tavon Smith for Hill, I think you probably equal things out a little bit there. St. Louis's defense, the one thing that scares me a little bit about this game is I think this either stays way under or just blows the number out, because I think St. Louis is, St. Louis's defense, to me, is a lot of smoke and mirrors. Everybody loves their defense. I don't love their secondary. Their front seven a little banged up without Chris Long, obviously. In Dallas, you're just waiting at any moment. Is that defense for real? But most people don't think it is. Maybe they get, looks like they get Skandrick back this week, so that might help some things. But for me, as a side, I think the only way to look here would be St. Louis. I think this is a tight game. If you're looking at a pick 'em, you could probably use a 7-point teaser in either direction, and you probably, it's a winning leg.
Yeah, no real argument for me. I think the only way to approach this game is definitely with the home side and the Rams, and no matter how ugly it looks, to expect Dallas to win back-to-back road games is a bit of a daunting task, as you allude to, a defense that's looked better than anticipated, but I think a lot of that, they benefited from Tennessee not being entirely focused. And yet, the fourth member of this much-maligned NFC East, the New York Giants, 2-point home underdog against the Texans. You've seen some money come in on the total from 42 down to 41. Is this finally the time to buy low on the New York Giants, or do we write them off for dead? But you have to admit, good travel spot for the Giants here, especially given that Houston went to the West Coast, took on Oakland, now traveling to the East Coast. And, of course, the Texans probably realize how bad this Giants team is that they're going head-to-head with.
Yeah, this is an interesting spot. If the Giants were ever to show up, this would be the spot. This is likely their season right here. Houston, week one against RG3, weren't overly impressive. Fortunate to get a win there. Travel across the country. Obviously, you look at that Raiders score and you see a victory by double digits. I don't believe it played out that way on the field. Lots of turnovers in the green and red zone for Oakland. When you really look at this Houston defense, what was concerning to me is how poor they were on first and second down. That was something that was extremely interesting to me. And when I dug back into the Giants game, they were pretty effective this week on offense. Despite some Victor Cruz drops, they were very good on offense. Unfortunately, four turnovers, that's the issue. And so this is what concerns me about the Giants is Tom Coughlin is a guy who is very regimented in how he disciplines his team and how they're focused in attention to detail. And that's one thing the Giants don't have right now. Turning the ball over, lots of mistakes, lots of penalties. So my only issue here is, are they done with Tom Coughlin from a player's perspective? Have they thrown in the towel on their coach? And that's the lone concern here. But definitely you're going to see sharp money on the Giants. I predicted earlier in the week this game closes around a pick'em, and I'm not shying away from that.
Do you think you see threes even flicker in the market?
Threes? No. I think this is headed the other way. I think the Giants close a pick.
Gotcha. As I was saying, looking at 2.5 right now, wasn't sure if we thought it even got close there. But, I mean, like you said, public on one side, we know the professionals will come in on the other side. So probably makes a ton of sense that this game will come down exactly like you predicted, very similar to what we saw last week for the Giants' home date against Arizona, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, when you look at this across the board right now, it looks like you're seeing twos, Pinnacle trending in the direction towards 1.5. And so that's just everything that I saw last week. I saw an offense that was absolutely abysmal in the preseason, really turn things around. I just think this is a spot. We're down on Houston right now. I think the 2-0 really presents some value in the Giants. And again, once we're able to dig a little deeper, I was very impressed with the Giants' offense aside from the turnovers, and some of them were really tough turnovers, screen passes where running backs are just falling down and losing the ball. So I think if they can clean that up a little bit, the Giants are the clear-cut right side here.
And when we look at the rest of the card, not a ton of time remaining for us to kind of bounce around pretty quickly. Green Bay, Detroit, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, and San Francisco, Arizona. We'll get to the Sunday night game as well. Anything jump off the page at those particular matchups?
You know, nothing I see. When you talk about Green Bay, Detroit, obviously another game where professional bettors are siding with the home team here. Green Bay has not looked good. In short, obviously tough spot week one going to Seattle. Week two, they don't really start very well. Rebound late, couple mistakes by Geno Smith and the Jets. But I think this is probably the right side with the home team here. A lot of points in my estimation. Obviously, this is a game the public's going to be going over, so if you like the over, go now. But other than that, it's pretty ABC for me in this game. It's probably Detroit, and it's if you like the over, you go now.
And as far as Indy, 0-2 against the 0-2 Jacksonville side, history and trends, if you pay attention to that sort of thing, I actually have a blog post up on it on toddstake.com about the historical situation the Jags fit into. But can we stomach them here with Chad Henne as their starting quarterback?
You know, I was looking, if you can grab 7 and Indianapolis was coming off a win, you know, maybe you'll look that way. I know the math guys still like Jacksonville in this spot. For me, I'm going to be off of it because I don't know what Indianapolis is at this current moment. We saw Monday night, they wanted to run the ball. Week one, same thing, they wanted to run the ball. But that approach is, we're going to run the ball. We know our defense is bad. Let's keep the opposing team's offense off the field. They're 0-2 under that method. At some point, I feel like they're going to say, you know what, let's outscore teams. Let's open this up. Let's put it in Andrew Luck's hands. And I don't know if this is the week or not. If it is, I don't want to be back in Jacksonville. As you said, Chad Henne, very, very bad. He is not an NFL quarterback, starting quarterback. 19-42 when he takes a snap, 5-26 his last 31. So not a lot to love there. Obviously, Jacksonville gets Cyprian back. But I'm not running to bet this game right now.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. And a game that, you know, I personally won't run to bed on Sunday night, I think one of the trickier, more fascinating matchups here. Pittsburgh, extra time to prepare for a 2-0 Carolina team, that same Carolina team who's taken money against them each of the first 2 weeks. Saw this number open up soft 3, even 3.5, and that's basically where the numbers remain. However, the totals come up from 40 out to 42. You know, what do we take away from each of these two teams with four games worth of work between them combined?
Carolina is a team that a lot of professionals were down on. What they do well is control the line of scrimmage, run the ball. That's something Pittsburgh has been unable to stop. We saw a Cleveland team with backup running backs just absolutely pummel them in the second half of that first game. Last week on Thursday, much of the same. This Pittsburgh's defense is very, very bad. Maybe with some extra time, they get some things corrected, get some things fixed. Carolina, surprising again last week, sharp guys all over the Lions. I disagreed a little bit. I think Cam Newton got, some sea legs under him. I think this is a game where we've seen professionals go over 40. 41 is that key number. Did they get out ahead of the market? Is this a position that they're going to keep? I'm not sure at this point. It looks like that. But when you do some things, professional bettors will just grab numbers, get out ahead of the market, and now they have plenty of options on Sunday Night Football where we know the public's going to be betting over, and they might come in at the optimal number under and try to middle this game around that 41 if it gets out to 43, the two largest key numbers in the NFL right now.
Do you think there is a chance that this number could get as high as 4 on Sunday night if we get to 3.5 with minimal resistance, knowing that the public, obviously, so much of their decisions for those standalone marquee games is dictated by the day they're having, seeing early about a 7 out of every 10 tickets coming in on those Panthers?
What's interesting to me is we have seen some professional money grab some of the hooks that were out there and available, and this is why you're seeing at Chris a 3 minus 130, which is a very hesitant number to go to 3.5. So I don't believe we get to 4. I think maybe we see some 3.5s, but again, I think professionals will continue to pick those numbers off. Not a game that I'm interested in right now at 3 or even 3.5, really. It's just a bad matchup for Pittsburgh. But again, this is a big game, extra time. They looked so poor on national TV, and that's one thing that professionals use to their advantage is how poorly teams looked in a national spotlight. So you nailed it. Carolina is going to get a lot of the reception on this bailout Sunday night game, but I think there'll be enough resistance from the professionals that this does not get to 4.
Always a chance to buy low when teams look bad. And, of course, the biggest thing, we know we couldn't cover every game on these podcasts. You can hit up Payne Insider. That's at PayneInsider.com. That is his website, at Payne Insider on Twitter. He's more than happy to break down games, much like I am, Todd Furman. As far as the Monday night game, we will cover that on the Monday Morning Review podcast. We break down everything we learned from the week 3 that was in the NFL. And you talk about mismatches, Payne. I think we've identified one in this Jets-Bears game that'll leave a lot of these people pretty excited. The question becomes is how high will this Monday night line actually climb, given that it's opened at pick and we're already seeing soft 3s as we record this here on Thursday?
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it. We'll tease it a little bit. We will get to that game on Monday's podcast, but I think it's pretty evident when you look at this game and where it opened, who's on which side of this game.
For Payne Insider, he of the copyright infringement issues, I am your host, Todd Furman. Best of luck for everyone as they approach Thursday night's game between Tampa and Atlanta, and more importantly, may you have a profitable Sunday, and we'll see you at the window.